Today's program has been brought to you by the Greenhouse Tavern, one of Bon Appetit magazine's top 10 restaurants in America. For more information, visit www.thegreenhousetavern.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 58 of The Morning After.
Good afternoon.
I'm your host, Jesse Kiefer.
I am Gentella Colomas Kiefer.
I'm really excited for today's show. We have a couple serious celebrities in studio.
We really do.
You and I. Not really, actually, in studio.
Jesse Kiefer, ladies and gentlemen, she will be here for the rest of her life.
That laugh, that infectious laugh, is that of Erin Fairbanks. She's our executive director here at Heritage Radio Network. She's also the host of The Farm Report. Welcome Woo! To the studio, Erin.
Thanks for having me, ladies.
She's here because she's going to give us one of the most exclusive What's on the Menu at Chardonnay's we've ever experienced.
My gums are tingling with anticipation.
I think that's because you've been a vegan for the past.
It's also because I haven't flossed since 1986.
Well done. Well done. Also in studio today, Eamon Rocky, owner and general manager of Aska in Williamsburg. It's so hot right now.
Happy to be here. I'm here to actually find out what's on the menu at Chardonnay's.
Well, I mean, I'm glad it's the catching on.
Oh, we're going to tell you. What else are we going to tell you?
Well, I think we're going to tell you about front of house.
Front of house?
You know, our...
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
Really got to find out who made that jingle. That thing is gold.
I hear she's expensive.
She is expensive. She's also incredibly good looking.
So front of house, our segment where we investigate, we tell the stories of the blunders and mishaps of the front of house servers, bartenders, managers.
And lucky as we are going to be graced yet again with the presence of the lovely and talented Baroness Olivier, the Dame Joan Plowright, the Baroness Olivier, who so generously has agreed again to come in studio just to read this segment for us. So she's finishing her drink. Are you going to be good? She's finished. She's ready.
It was below freezing the night I met Celebrity X. After an armful of Grammy wins, relationship shockers, and a brief stint in Boozers Anonymous, Celebrity X had established herself as bona fide pop royalty. I, a lowly, nervous-handed plebeian, had no chance against her powers. I was nearing the end of my shift that night at Restaurant X, a newly erected gastropub on the Lower East Side. Dinner had been quiet that evening as I polished a bucket of demitasse. I dreamt of what I had waiting at home. Peanut butter-filled pretzels, at least 2 cans of Modelo, and 5 full seasons of West Wing streaming on Netflix. My lips tingled with anticipation. "Don't wind down just yet," I heard my boss whisper in passing as he sauntered through the dining room on a phone call. He covered the phone with one hand and winked at me. "We have a special guest coming after hours," he said. "I'm losing my shit." He was an excitable gay Irishman and routinely rolled his eyes back in his head whenever something went decidedly good or bad. Celebrity X, as it turned out, was not only on her way, a friend of a friend of a friend who called Restaurant X and requested that they stay open past the normal 2 o'clock closing time to accommodate her crew, but was on her way with a bus full of 30 loud-talking star-fuckers. They would be given whatever they wanted, I was told, and I would be their girl-slave until they felt fit to leave. I heard her before I saw her. Celebrity X's entrance was the stuff of magic. In she glided, her able-bodied security outfit forming a human wall around her, feet barely touching the floor as she removed her diamond-studded sunglasses. I hovered in the corner with my hands in my pocket, trying to appear as if I was unfazed by it all, when she stopped, looked me over, and said with a hiss, "Are you mine?" "I am serving you, yes," I said. She frowned, let out a long, dissatisfied sigh, and walked back to the bar. And so it was that I found myself carrying a tray of 60 chilled Patron shots to a crowd of designer-clad 19-year-olds, each somehow barking orders at me without once making eye contact. I felt as if I'd somehow been transported into that scene in Eyes Wide Shut, only instead of masks, my cloaked aggressors were in Manolo Blahniks and draped silk. At one point, a young woman with blunt-cut bangs and a lisp asked me, "Do you like being a waitress?" To which I jokingly replied, "Not half as much as I love being a rapper." The joke was not received, and the next thing I knew, I was being dragged by the arm like a rag doll and deposited on the sidewalk in front of the restaurant by Lispy Bangs. "Stay here," she said. I was too terrified to contest. It was mid-January, and I tried to make smoke rings with my breath before remembering that that doesn't work. And Lispy Bangs was back, this time with a group of others, including, to my shock, Celebrity X. "She's a rapper!" screamed Lispy. I tried to save myself. "Oh, no, no, not really," I said. "I mean, I do it, but I mean, it's just silly stuff. A hobby, really." Celebrity X sucked on a cigarette as if the last remaining oxygen on Earth was stored in its filter, and said, "Let's hear a rap then. Nigel, rap against her. Like a battle." What happened next can only be described as biblical. A battle did indeed ensue, and Nigel, though very drunk, was a noble competitor. I kept up as best I could, Celebrity X laughing and clapping like a schoolgirl seeing her first circus. I was instructed to, quote, "get dirtier" by Celebrity X, and never one to disobey authority, I ended with a grand finish that included a line about twisting Nigel's men parts in a knot like a pretzel and selling them at a hot dog stand. Everyone seemed generally pleased by this, and I was declared the winner. 4 hours later, as the sun rose on the after-party, Celeb X and crew began to file out. On her way to her tour bus, security beasts standing by, she grabbed my face with two hands, and she kissed me. She held the kiss for what seemed like 3 solid minutes, and I held my hands awkwardly at my side, eyes bulging. "You're a star," she said, and with that, she was gone. I walked to the Q train in a daze, not sure of whether to call my best friend to squeal or file a police report. When I finally arrived home, peanut butter pretzels staring at me from their station on the kitchen counter, I knew, suddenly and soberly, that I was, at last, a woman. Thank you.
Thanks, Dame. We'll be right back on The Morning After with Eamon Rocky of Aska and Williamsburg.
You're listening to I Get Pretty Upset by Controller on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
We'd like to give a big welcome to our newest business members, Jonathan and Amelia Sawyer, at the Greenhouse Tavern in Cleveland, Ohio. Their restaurant follows green principles of organic and environmentally friendly ingredients while using recyclables and highly developed methods of composting, sourcing alternative energy, and focusing on conservation practices. To learn more, visit their website, www.greenhousetavern.com. To learn more about becoming a business member, email us, info@heritageradionetwork.org.
We're back here on The Morning After. He's worked at some of the finest restaurants in Manhattan, but now he's taken the Scandinavian train over the bridge and into Brooklyn. Owner and general manager of Aska in Williamsburg, Eamon Rocky.
Nice to be here.
It's great to see you. Aska, I've been seeing press about it all over the place. First off, what does it mean? What does Aska mean?
Aska is a Swedish word that refers to ashes. The story behind it is sort of that it grew out of the inspiration of Frey, pop-up that was inside of Kinfolk Studios.
With a lot of good feedback.
A lot of good feedback, absolutely. They did some really cool things. Frey means seed, and the seed grew into Frey. And the cheesy story is that, you know, though it no longer is around, from its ashes is Aska.
So the chef from Frey has partnered with you to open Aska, and it's going to be a permanent restaurant. It's not going to be like a pop-up.
Well, we serve dinner 7 nights a week. Okay. Frey did 3. The space is open. We serve coffee during the day. Really amazing coffee program and some cool pastries and things like that going on as well.
So how do you set up for dinner? You do a tasting menu, like, what is it, Sunday through Thursday? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you have dinner Friday, Saturday.
The a la carte menu is available 7 days a week, exactly. And
okay.
We additionally serve a tasting menu, which we have reserved, that we have received quite a bit of, you know, buzz about Sunday through Thursday.
So do you have to, like, break things down and kind of reconfigure the space?
Not as much as you think,
okay.
No.
It's Kinfolk Studios, so that means it's like a design studio, or
Kinfolk Studios sort of studio? is an amazing group of people that do graphic design. They have a bar in Tokyo. They design bikes. It's all sorts of cool stuff. And we've partnered with them to utilize their space for Asuka.
So how did the partnership between you and Friedrich Brasilius happen? He's your chef.
Sure, yeah. He came into Aterra, where I was in Tribeca. I'd worked on that team for a couple of years, and I was looking to move on to something else and build something of my own. And when he came in, it sort of resonated with him. We were a tasting menu-centric restaurant, pretty progressive. And after dining there, I joined him for dinner at Frey and had a really amazing meal, and we decided to work together.
And he was already looking for a partner to kind of reconfigure the idea.
Sure. I mean, pop-ups are a lot of fun, but I mean, there's usually a reason behind them, you know, a great chef or a great team trying to showcase something special, and they, if they're great, like Frey was great, garner a lot of attention and often lead to bigger and better things.
So you're not only the general manager, you've put together the cocktail program.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So and I've heard you're doing some wild things. I mean, wild and kombucha.
Wild?
Sure. Like,
crazy.
Like kombucha cocktails and
sure.
energy drinks and things
sure.
like that.
Yeah. I mean, those are fun buzzwords, but, you know, the idea behind them is that there's a story behind a lot of what mm-hmm. we do. And for me, that's something that I'm trying to have be step one, as opposed to the last step in the creation of a cocktail in a beverage program as a whole. You know, whenever you talk to a bartender about a drink, you know, they've usually already nailed down what they want to serve, what the ingredients are, what the proportions are, how they're going to serve it. And then they're like, okay, what does it remind me of? You know, how do I name it? You know, how do I relate this to our world? And it's usually the last step, and that's fine. But I think for me, I'm trying to do something a bit more dynamic with the cocktail program at Asuka and with my future, and have that be the first step. I want to see, you know, something inspiring lead to a series of steps or investigations or experiments or whatever it may be that eventually makes something beautiful, as opposed to the other way around. So with regard to the kombucha, for instance, you know, it's far less about the kombucha and more about the investment of time and energy and thought. Whenever I was in Scandinavia, at a restaurant called Faviken, the chef is Magnus Nilsson, a really inspiring chef, and he served a dish that were these tiny little potatoes that were almost no bigger than a marble in most cases, that were cooked in leaves that had fermented for over a year in the snow on the mountain beside the restaurant. So we went out and dug up these leaves, but, you know, it was really cold up mm-hmm. there, and so they were preserved, but they slowly fermented over the course of this time. And he roasted the potatoes in the leaves, and whenever you smell the dish, it's you know, placed in front of you, and it's just this big pile of leaves with all these little potatoes in it. And, you know, there's only two ingredients, but the aroma of that dish is just unreal. I'll never forget it. And it was reminiscent of pu'er tea, a style of very deeply dark fermented tea that I've always loved. And I wanted to pay an homage to that dish. And so I started thinking about it. I was like, okay, well, how do I do that? What was so engaging about that presentation? And so for me, it was about time and fermentation and the leaves. And so, you know, it made perfect sense to use a technique like kombucha. And, you know, you say kombucha and people automatically have all these reference points for it, you know, the sort of new age and, you know, yogi lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. I have no problem being associated with that. I think it's great. But ultimately, kombucha for me is a unique fermentation that is indicative of a time and a place and a series of ingredients and you know, the person who puts those things together. It's constantly evolving as well. It's a living organism. And so we use pu'er tea, which is highly atypical for kombucha, and combine it with raw sugar and aquavit as a very distinct nod to Scandinavia, and a bit of caraway, which is a very big part of the cuisine and culture. And, you know, through only a very few number of ingredients, but investment of months of time, you know, we're 6 months in and it's still growing and evolving and changing, and you have something quite unique.
I've always wondered this. At what quantity do you ferment it? How big a batch?
Well, it can be anything you want. You know, yeah. The one that we utilize at Aska is large enough that it's able to support itself. You know, we draw off of it. Think of it like a Solera almost. We draw off of it in quantity that supports our ability to produce the cocktail. And still maintain some relative consistency. I mean, the batch changes, and that's what's cool about it. It's growing and it's living, and it's unique time to time. But you could do it in a smaller batch, certainly. Most people do,
yeah,
or larger.
Just thinking, that's so incredible. You could have this drink, you know, today, and then you could have this drink, you know, in 2 months, and it
you should
an entirely different thing.
You should.
And I do. I love that. Like. That focus, that commitment, and that's certainly taking cocktails beyond what a lot of people are doing. The Scandinavian seems to be a buzzword as well right now, with Acme recreating itself and becoming still Acme, but I believe the chef was
Mads.
Yeah, was one of the opening chefs for Noma, and Noma is huge right now. Mm. How is the reception of your version of Scandinavian restaurant coming?
Well, it's an interesting thought. You know, I'm not the chef, and I think that, you know, Frederick could certainly comment on that as far as the cuisine is concerned, and his background as a Swede himself better than I. But, you know, what I constantly go back to with regard to Scandinavia is that it's much more philosophical than it is anything else. You know, it doesn't require a pantry that has an A to Z list of all the things you need to produce that style of food. You know, the cool thing about Scandinavian cuisine in an outsider's loose vocabulary from my perspective is that, you know, it can exist anywhere in the world. It's about how you think about things, you know, doing things with intention and actually thinking about what can be produced from every aspect of an ingredient, and how it can become something beautiful, and how it can maintain its integrity as an ingredient without being a slave to tradition for the sake of being a slave to tradition, and I love tradition, but, you know, it should have a purpose. You know, if you're doing something because it's the way that it's been done for 500 years, and, you know, 500 years ago they looked at things very differently than we do right now, then, you know, I think that it's time to say, why don't we do it the way that is most fitting to our day and to our time and to our place? So, you know, whenever we think about, you know, we were referring to cocktails a minute ago, when we think about cocktails, are we making a shandy with lemonade and beer because it's always been made with lemon and beer? Or are we saying to ourselves, well, ultimately, it needs to have beer, but, you know, why couldn't we use vinegar instead? So how about we take the same beer that we're going to make the cocktail with, and over the course of a few months or weeks or whatever, we make our own vinegar with it, and we use that to make it sour. And like, okay, well, what season is it? Persimmons are really great right now, or pears are really great now, or, you know, if it's summer, it's raspberries, or whatever it may be, you know, whatever is growing in our region, whatever we're able to source that is beautiful and a reference point for New Yorkers, you know, why don't we find the right combination of what is available to us, and think about what makes this shandy delicious, and, you know, do persimmon with a dark beer for winter, and, you know, fermented malt vinegar that we make in house, you know, and produce something that is stylistically quite unique, but also, you know, it is in and of itself actually a shandy.
And so, to me, what you're saying sounds like Scandinavian just kind of follows along that the local,
yeah,
it's very pure,
yeah,
and yeah,
yeah.
So in Williamsburg, I don't necessarily think of a tasting menu at a restaurant in Williamsburg. I know, like, Marlo and Diner are doing cool food. Issa, in its first incarnation, was
sure
amazing.
Ignacio is incredibly talented.
And you know, what is the I guess, what has the feedback been from people living in the neighborhood?
Oh, man, we've had such wonderful feedback. The cool thing about Asuka is that, you know, you can come in for a phenomenal cappuccino at 9 o'clock in the morning from Dallas Brothers Coffee, is our roaster that's been around for over 100 years in Queens, and I think that's fun. And, you know, the milk we use is from a cooperative of dairies that are in the area. And we're not doing these things because, you know, we're looking to, you know, stand on a soapbox and say, hey, we're local. We're doing them because, you know, it feels like the right thing to do, and because we can have relationships with the people that are in our neighborhood, and it feels good to be able to talk to a person, you know. And then you come in the afternoon or the evening, and you can have, you know, some potato dumplings that are delicious and easy going, and drink a beer and really sort of just relax. And if you want to, you can certainly make a reservation for our tasting menu. And we tried to keep it as approachable as possible, so as many people can sit down for it as you know, are interested. The pairings that accompany them in the beverage program, the service program, is all intended to be something that is casual but also very attentive and applicable, appropriate, so that, you know, it's seamless integration, something that's been more and more important to me over the course of the years, making sure that everything belongs on the same page.
So you're kind of taking what you learned in the fine dining world at 11 Madison Park and at Atara and kind of making it for everyone.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the evolution of it began began to manifest itself at Atara, you know, building that service program, building the beverage program, and starting to think about things in terms of what is befitting for the space, what is going to make this the most impactful experience possible, as opposed to, you know, what are people going to expect and how can I meet those expectations? You know, meeting expectations is certainly important, but if your goal is to meet expectations, it's very difficult to surpass them, as opposed to how can I exceed expectations by thinking about things in their most fundamental states.
So if people want to come experience what you guys are doing, where can they go to make reservations to learn about you?
You should go on our website.
Okay.
AskaNYC.com.
And are there any availabilities?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So yeah. I was assuming, like, I feel like I read on Eater that, like, all Aska, you know, tasting menu reservations are booked for, like, the next, you know, 4 months or something.
Could we drop your name?
I would be honored, but I don't know if anybody would recognize it. You know, I've tried to think about how to make sure that we are as approachable as possible. So, in so doing, you know, we don't let reservations out 4 months because, mm-hmm. you know, if we're a fully reserved restaurant for 4 months, then we miss out on a large segment of the clientele, that a demographic that I would like to see come and join us. And that mm-hmm. is the neighborhood. You know, so we try to make sure that reservations are made available within a time frame that neighborhood folks and New Yorkers and, you know, people just who happen to swing by and visit New Yorkers can come and dine with us.
And it's also across the street from the Wythe Hotel.
Yeah, those guys are great. I'm so grateful that we were able to open up across from them. They're amazing.
So do you have a lot of people being sent from Wythe to you guys?
You know, I know that there have been quite a few. The Wythe is... The Wythe is a darling for people in my industry, you know, people who build bars and people who build restaurants, great chefs, you know. So every once in a while, you know, we'll get an email from somebody saying, hey, I'm at the Wythe, you know, I own a restaurant in, you know, this crazy obscure place in Spain, and, you know, I've been reading about you, and it's just so humbling and so cool to experience that and to have, you know, great thinkers from across the world that are staying across the street come and dine with us.
Well, I'm one of the lucky few who actually has a reservation there tomorrow, which is completely coincidence, and I can't wait to check it out. Thank you so much for being on the show, Eamon.
Thank you.
And you're going to stick around for what's on the menu at Chardonnay's. We'll get the Scandinavian version too.
Awesome.
All right. We'll be right back on the morning after.
Avoid large places at night. Keep to small.
Correction, you've been listening to Space Disease, not Controller. This one's called Death Drop on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Every Tuesday at 12 p.m., you can call food scientist Dave Arnold and ask any question you want.
John from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. Cooking
issues! Who am I fooling? This is horrible stuff. Without glutamic acid, you die!
It is a matter of taste, but there's a lot more fat in sausage than you think.
Get ahead of the curve. Tune into Cooking Issues every Tuesday at 12 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
And we're back on The Morning After. In studio, Aaron Fairbanks, my boss, executive director,
my hero.
Heritage Radio Network. How's it going?
I'm blushing.
How does it feel to be here on a Sunday when you're here all the time?
You know, it's interesting because usually during the day it gets, you know, busy for lunch, but it's never Sunday busy.
Oh, Sunday busy is like balls to the wall, hipsters to the
Sunday
wall.
Sunday busy is downright dangerous. I typically come with knee pads, but
I'm actually wearing
dry cleaned
knee pads.
You are.
Erin actually is in her best exercise gear, which is the perfect outfit to wear at Chardonnay's.
What's on the menu at Chardonnay's? The age-old question. I really would love to know.
What's on the menu at Chardonnay's?
What's on the menu with Chardonnay? So sweet of Sade to do that for us.
Chardonnay is our mythical restaurant in anywhere town USA and actually worldwide.
As we've gone international.
Yeah, we've gone to France with Chardonnays. So I'm looking to extend it to other countries. But, you know, celebrating all bad food and wine trends is just, that's a global thing.
It brings the people together.
So, Aaron, you worked at Savoy. You spearheaded charcuterie program at Gramercy Tavern. You spearheaded No Goat Left Behind for Heritage Foods USA. I think you're my meat gal. And I would really love to know what sort of meat is on the menu at Chardonnay's.
Well, at Chardonnay's, I think there's really one trend when it comes to meat that stands out above the rest, and that is the pairing of meat and fruit. Meat is good, but meat is somehow better with fruit. So I was torn, you know. Taking a look, I would probably start out with a little sautéed foie gras on a pineapple with a little cinnamon sauce. Because also, nothing can be too sweet at Chardonnay's.
Nothing.
Canned pineapple, right?
Including the Chardonnay.
Including the Chardonnay. The sweeter, the better. It actually probably would do well in my neighborhood.
Slightly oak.
It's in a jug, I think.
With a spout.
And then, you know, I get kind of more torn when it comes to my entree selection because there's so many compelling options. I was, you know, pulled towards the peachy pork picante on a bed of confetti rice. Real blending of cultures there, a little sweet, sweet porky flavor.
Mm. It's kind of like al pastor.
Exactly.
Meets pinata.
Well, I think confetti rice is, you know, really pretty exciting. Or maybe just a simple steak with like a lovely Cabernet butter, maybe some fresh ground black pepper, tableside, obviously.
Yes.
And a few grilled figs. Sounds delicious. But, you know, one of my big concerns is really watching my weight, making sure that I have something lean and, you know, that keeps my figure where I want it to be. So in that area, I'm looking at chicken, obviously. And then it really comes down to a choice whether I want grilled lime chicken or maybe a little roasted chicken with candied lemon.
Mm.
But sometimes, you know, after taking a look at the menu, I get just a little overwhelmed by all the delicious choices and just say, screw it, and go home and order Hawaiian pizza.
I feel like that menu may be the stoner's Chardonnay.
Stoner's Chardonnay tasting menu.
Stoner's Chardonnay tasting menu.
So what is on the Scandinavian Chardonnay's tasting menu?
Lots of herring. Definitely lots of herring.
Lots of herring.
Pickled.
And sour cream.
For sure.
Some rye. I don't know.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I can't wait to eat Chardonnay's.
My great. What's on the menu with Chardonnay's? I'm sorry, I would never speak through that. My great-great-grandmother came over on a boat from Sweden and made a lot of herring. I had the pleasure of meeting her. She passed when I was about 10, so I got to hang out with her a couple of times. And it was pretty much exclusively fish and meatballs. I never saw a green on the plate. She was also 96. So.
It's pretty crazy going to Stockholm. And you know, I thought that Swedish meatballs were something that was constrained to IKEA and
I was gonna say.
Storybooks, but it's completely untrue. No, it's for real.
It is like, for real, and they mean it.
I met another New Yorker in Stockholm, and she jokingly referred to the time between 12 and 1 as a meatball hour. Because
it's like tea time.
It's insane. But it's true. In Stockholm, everybody gets off for lunch at noon and goes to the same restaurants in the same neighborhoods and has meatballs. They're amazing. And the craziest thing for me is that, like, you see all these guys in suits and, like, wearing blazers and stuff. And you know, they're with their buddies or their coworkers. And so they're getting these platters of meatballs and, like, lingonberries and mashed potatoes. And they're all drinking milk and beer. It's the coolest thing. It's strange, but very
great
cool.
On a hot day.
Yeah, amazing.
Like double fisting milk and beer, or
that's a shandy I would like to take. Right
there. It's not far off from what I do. You know, we do have a clarified milk punch on the menu. But having said that, it's pretty amazing to see that. Like,
yeah, that's crazy. Well, we'll have to, maybe we'll do just a meatball specific Chardonnays one day.
Oh, 100%.
It'll just be variations, overtures on a meatball, if you will.
So in the meantime, the IKEA cafe is the Scandinavian Chardonnays.
Oh, it totally is.
Until we find a better one.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being on the show, guys. Aaron, what's coming up next on the Farm Report?
I am interviewing Eric Hoffner of the Orion Institute, an amazing publication. It's been around for about 30 years. We're going to kind of talk about the role of media and advocacy in the ag world.
Fantastic. And anything, any events, any new stuff coming up at ASCA?
Well, I think you should join us for Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. So romantic, right?
I'd love to do that.
Are there candles?
We always have candles.
And roses? And pink champagne?
Can I have persimmon in my shandy?
I'm sorry, that was the Chardonnay's Valentine's Day.
You can
Day.
Definitely have persimmon in your shandy. Yeah. I mean, Freddie's really into offal, so you never know. I mean, eat your heart out at Scandinavian Valentine's Day at ASCA.
And on that note, this is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.